Hi, guys. Welcome back to this week's episode, or part two of this week's episode, I should say, of Millennial Mirrors. The topic this week is self-acceptance, and we're here with Nortahini, and we're going to be talking about what does self-acceptance mean, how do you go about accepting yourself, the differences between self-acceptance and self-love, and more. So listen in. I think it was quite a good episode, and I think you'll take something away. And yeah, tune in. Hi, Noor, and welcome back to the podcast. Doing part two.
Let's do this.
All right. So the episode is called Self-Acceptance. So why is self-acceptance so much more of a talking point nowadays?
It's a very good question. And a really hard question to answer as well. But I'm going to try anyway.
That's what we're here for you to do.
Why is self-acceptance such a hot topic these days? I'm going to probably paint like a very general picture of where we are right now as a human race.
Mm-hmm.
I think some people might relate to it, some might not. This is just the way that I see things. But I think that we are, as a world, having an existential crisis right now.
I would agree with that.
The world has moved on so much and so fast over the last two generations that we are still having trouble adapting and understanding our place in the world.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like this might be a very general and sort of maybe naive way of looking at things, but I feel like a few generations ago, your path was more defined. You know, your community was the community you were born in.
Mm-hmm.
Your job was whatever, you know, job the community required you to do, or the job that your father and grandfather did. Or
yeah,
it was more simple in that sense. Today, you can be whoever you want to be.
Right.
Your community can be whatever community in the world you want it to be. It doesn't even have to be physically where you are. You can have the community that you resonate with can be an online community and could be halfway across the globe. So you can be whoever you want to be. Your community can be whatever you want it to be. You can have almost whatever job you want within reason. You can be any gender you want to be today. Mm. I don't know if you're going to keep that or not.
Keep it in.
And all of these things are incredible. Mm-hmm. And they are definitely a sign of the way that we are progressing. But when progress is that rapid, you get lost.
Yeah.
So if I can be whoever I want to be, who am I?
Yeah.
You know, it's like we also have, I think, an existential crisis when it comes to our values.
Yeah.
Because our values have gone from, your worth, maybe not values, but your worth was measured in terms of values before, and your honesty and your integrity. Today, what is your worth valued in? Is it valued in financial success? Is it mm-hmm. valued in terms of followers and likes? Is it valued? There's so much mixed messaging. I'm not saying I have the answers, but all I'm saying is that we are faced with this giant question of who am I? What is my purpose? What is my role in the world? What is my path? And as a result of that, there's a lot of introspection that's happening. I don't think that self-acceptance is something that everyone achieves easily. I don't think that this is a path that a lot of people are on. I think that to be on that path is somewhat of a privilege because it means that a lot of your other needs are met, right?
Yeah.
So the hierarchy of needs, which is if you have a shelter over your head, if you have food on your table, then you can allow yourself to move to like the second level of the pyramid and start to think about, you know, who am I? What's my purpose? And all of those things, which mm-hmm. are very maybe more representative of this generation than the previous generation. So what I've basically done is I've sort of painted this picture where we have so many questions and we're looking for answers.
Yeah.
Does that resonate with you?
I think that makes sense. I think, like you said, you're spoiled for choice. It's like when you go to supermarket and you're trying to like make a choose toothpaste, and it's just like you have all these different options and what do I pick?
Yeah.
No one's told me, like, there's just, toothpaste is not really a good example, but you get what I mean. Like, you go somewhere, you're trying to buy something, and like you have so many options that it becomes harder to make a decision. And that's like one of the things that, I mean, when we study marketing, they always tell you, like, human beings, you give them too many choices, they struggle. Because unless they're taught how to make the decision, they have no idea how to do it. But I think considering the fact that we've been in this place now where you have so many choices, but critical thinking, decision-making skills, all of those are not part of the curriculum, right? Mm. And so you're taught these subjects, math, English, all history, what have you, geography, et cetera, taught a lot of fact-based curricula, but you're not really taught a lot of critical thinking curricula. So when it gets time for you to actually think about your life or assess or, you know, be introspective and have any kind of self-awareness, those skills are not really developed in us from a young age. And so then it becomes your responsibility as an adult to get past those low levels of the Maslow's hierarchy of needs. So the safety, the money, the you know, the friends and all of that. And then once you manage to juggle all of those, then it's like, oh, wait, now what do I...
Yeah, like, what's my purpose?
What's next? And then on top of that, you have globalization, and you have everyone has access to everyone. Mm. So now I'm not just comparing myself to Joe down the street. I'm comparing myself to everyone in the world because I can see how everyone in the world lives, what they achieve, what they're doing on a day-to-day basis, et cetera, et cetera. So no matter what my benchmark is, it'll always be shifting and it'll always be getting higher, right? My benchmark is no longer something that is within arm's reach.
Yeah.
And so it's constantly moving. The target's constantly moving. And so I don't even know who I'm supposed to be.
Yeah.
Because like who I thought I was supposed to be yesterday and maybe I achieved today has now shifted because I've achieved this goal. Oh, wait, there's like 10 people who are doing better than me.
Yes.
And so there's this kind of sense of I'm never going to be the image of what I'm supposed to be according to what I'm seeing out there, if that makes sense.
It does. It does. Because like success these days, it's a moving goalpost, right? Yeah. That's what they call it, right?
Moving goalpost,
I think. And just as you said, messaging is a huge part of the equation because we are being messaged at or we are being told things, whether we realize it or not, all the time. We're being told what is the more preferable way for us to be. What is the definition of success that we should ascribe to? What does it mean to have it? It's like trying to find yourself in the middle of a storm almost, and just things are flying at you from every direction.
But also there's this big messaging about self-acceptance. It's become like this very diluted term. You find an Instagram quote about it every day on your feed. But what does it actually mean to accept yourself? Because like you scroll past and like, the path to happiness is self-acceptance. And you're like, great, how do I get to that? Like, what does that even mean? Like, this means nothing to me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I think to bring it back to like this sort of world picture that the both of us have just painted, the most powerful thing you can do is stop and define the world, define success, define your path, it on your own terms, not on someone else's terms. Because we're all living on other people's terms right now. We've been told what we should wear, what we should eat, what we should do, what we should think, you know, what's cool and what's not, etc. But I think maybe there's two different levels of self-acceptance or two different types. So there's self-acceptance that is a result of self-awareness. So if we have to define self-acceptance, I think we should do that as well. Self-acceptance is to see yourself for who you are, your strengths and your weaknesses, and to accept that in a non-judgmental way. And so if self-acceptance comes as a result of self-awareness, because you see and you have taken a very deep look at who you are, then that's great. If self-acceptance comes from like a sort of an external factor instead of an internal factor, so Instagram post telling you, you are great the way you are, you are perfect, don't let anybody change you, and it doesn't come from introspection and self-awareness, then I don't feel like it's the real thing. I don't feel like the impact on your life is the same. I don't feel like it's based on solid foundations. And more importantly, it doesn't give you the kind of self-confidence that you need to face the world today.
Yeah. So what are the biggest obstacles in the journey of self-acceptance, do you think?
I think I see two obstacles very clearly. Maybe there are probably more, but the first two that come to mind, one is distraction.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that we don't actually have time or make time to sit with ourselves, to sit with our thoughts and to introspect. The other thing that comes to mind as an obstacle to self-acceptance is social media.
Mm-hmm.
I don't hate social media. I think that there is a way to use social media to your benefit or in a way that nourishes you as a person. I just don't think that most people are using it that way. I wasn't using it that way. I had to take a year off Instagram. Like, I shut down my account for a year in order to basically make it through my therapy and come to terms with who I was and work on self-awareness and self-acceptance. But the issue that I see with a platform like Instagram is you build your image of yourself for external validation.
Yeah.
So what you start to show, what you start to nurture as aspects of yourself are things that you know other people want to see.
Yeah.
You know? And so building your personality from the outside in instead of the inside out, I think is a huge issue. And I was talking to Dr. Saliha, who is the founder of Lighthouse Dubai,
mm-hmm.
which is a therapy center located in Dubai. And she was saying, I was talking to her and she has, her kids are teenagers and they don't have Instagram yet. And she was saying that the biggest disservice she can do to her children is allow them at such an immature stage of their life to build their personality from the outside in.
Yeah. I think like everyone now talks about themselves as a brand.
Mm.
And I think that's a horrific way to think about yourself. Because if you're thinking about yourself as a brand, then like as someone who has co-founded a company, the things I have to take into account about, you know, Finial Media's brand and you as a co-founder, the things you have to take into account in Goodness's brand, like those are not things you should be, that's not how you should think about yourself. Mm-hmm. You're not a construct for others' consumption.
Yeah.
And whereas a brand is a construct for someone's, someone else's construction.
In the startup world, they talk about product market fit, right?
Yeah.
Which is when your product is exactly what the market wants. You don't have to be exactly what the market wants. You just have to be yourself.
Yeah.
But that is very, very hard to do in today's world.
So what are some of the tools you use to reach a place of self-acceptance? Like what worked well for you? What maybe didn't work so well?
I think therapy has been super helpful, mm-hmm. right? Because going to therapy is like someone holding up a mirror
mm-hmm.
and explaining to you how to look at that mirror and what to make of what you see.
Yeah.
And having that kind of framework and guidance has been super, super helpful for me. So I think therapy is a really incredible tool. I know therapy is very expensive and not a lot of people have access to it and insurances don't cover it.
Yeah.
But there are things that you can do. So for example, there's an app called BetterHelp. Have you mm-hmm. heard of it?
Yeah.
So it's super affordable therapy, either as a video call or sort of a messaging platform. So something that looks a little bit like WhatsApp, but done on the BetterHelp app. And I think their therapists are in the US or in Europe. And it's
and also for those people who might be scared to go to a therapist locally because of privacy reasons or what have you, BetterHelp allows you to talk to someone who's in a completely different country, who doesn't know who you are, and nothing's going to get out. Because I know a lot of people sometimes don't want to go speak to a therapist because they're worried that things might get out or mm-hmm. things might get said. So that's also an option. And I think BetterHelp is just one of the places.
Yeah, I'm sure there's so many more. Journaling is also a really powerful one for me. Journaling allows me to, because when the thoughts are in your head, there's no start and end to them. They kind of, but when you put them on paper or when you say them to someone else, you're forced to make sense of it. You're forced to have a beginning and an end and to see clearly.
What does self-acceptance feel like? What does it look like when we accept ourselves?
I feel like I can't tell you yet. What does self-acceptance feel like? It's peaceful.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely a place where you feel more at peace because a lot of pressure is removed, or you are able to protect yourself from a lot of the external pressure. But I don't think it's not easy. It's like I left Instagram for a year mm-hmm. because my identity or my sense of worth had become so tied to the amount of likes that I got. And then I came back at the start of this year when we had launched the podcast, and mm-hmm. I was like, I want to be able to use my platform to promote the work that I'm doing. But still, there are days when I'm affected by the number of likes that I get for a photo. And I have to remind myself, like, Noor, you've worked so hard to get to where you are. Don't fall into the trap again. Like, don't. Yeah. It's a constant struggle.
Like, as long as you're interacting and you're interfacing day to day with the world, you're all like, self-acceptance is always going to be like a daily activity, I guess.
Yeah, exactly what you said. I think as long as you live in community and society, if yeah. I went to live in the woods by myself, I think that would be like pretty quickly achieved.
Which is how I'm going to be in my when I'm 70 years old in the woods by myself.
But if you live in a society and a community where being liked is still very desirable, like mm-hmm. let's be honest, everyone wants to be liked.
Yeah.
You know, it's very important. It's, you know, when you're liked, you get more jobs. When you're mm-hmm. liked, you have more friends. When you're liked, whatever it is. So it is desirable, but it's just about knowing how to set boundaries.
Humans are social creatures yes. by nature.
Yes.
And thus acceptance and being liked is literally part of our hardwiring. Mm-hmm. We've spoken about the fact that it's self-acceptance is a daily activity. And sometimes it's just not there for you that mm-hmm. day. What do you do on those days? When you're struggling.
Yeah. I journal, definitely. That's one of the most powerful things in my arsenal, one of the most powerful tools in my arsenal. And it sounds so basic. It sounds so simple to just take pen and paper and write down. But there's something that happens when you start to write in the beginning, it's like, I don't feel well today. I want, you know, and then the more you force yourself to write, the more things start to come out.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that really, really powerful. And they say you should aim to write at least 3 pages. Every morning. It's based on a book called The Artist's Way that I haven't read, but I've been told a lot.
You got
about
the cliff
it.
Notes.
Yeah, I got the cliff notes. I do that a lot, by the way. I'll read a headline, and I tell my husband, like, oh, by the way, did you hear this and that? He's like, oh no, what happened? Tell me more. I'm like, oh, I don't know. I just had the headline pop up on my phone. So it's like everything is in like small tidbits yeah. these days. But I journal. That's very powerful for me. I speak to my therapist. Mm-hmm. That's another one. I have a friend in London who I call her my soul sister. I really value her opinion, and I value where she is on her journey to self acceptance. And so it really helps me to talk to her, and she does the same with me, where we will talk to each other and then just ask questions back. You know, she's not there to give me an analysis of my mm-hmm. life. She's there to sort of point things out and say, why did you feel that? Why did you think that? And so on. And then. There are other things, you know, when you go through eating disorder treatment, they teach you to find new ways to soothe yourself, because mm-hmm. binge eating, which is what I went to treatment for at that point, the eating disorder that I had was binge eating, was a way to soothe myself. You mm-hmm. know, it was just, and physiologically, there is some truth to it, because supposedly the more your stomach expands, the more, I think, serotonin your brain produces. So you want that feeling, and it feels good, and you got your dopamine neurotransmitters that are firing in the side, and your serotonin, etc. So in general, it can be a very positive experience in the moment. But the sort of self-loathing, etc., that comes after makes it definitely not worth it. And the health risks as well.
Yeah.
So you are taught various tools to keep in your arsenal. So such as, they encourage you to make a playlist of all the songs that make you feel great. Mm. And actually dancing to music I love is really, really puts me in a good mood very, very, very fast. I've been working on my twerk.
Not good to know. Yet.
Yeah. And so they also encourage you to make a list of friends to call when you mm-hmm. feel down, movies that you like to watch. For me, Sex and the City always puts me in a great mood. Blindside puts me in a great mood.
Okay.
Sort of anything with Julia Roberts or Sandra Bullock puts me in a good mood. So you have the tools that you can draw on very quickly.
But that's amazing. Like, those are all really good ideas. And different ways to kind of like adjust your mood rather than self-soothing.
Yeah.
Which can sometimes, depending on what you're using to self-soothe, be detrimental.
Exactly. Yeah. I think it's important to have these things mapped out before you are in a situation where you need them.
True.
Because maybe in that moment, the easiest thing that, you know, maybe your brain takes over, or some part of yourself takes over, and you're going to just go for the food. Or another thing that always makes me feel better is online shopping. Is it the best?
Yeah.
Is it the best way for me to soothe myself? No, it's not. So just awareness of these things.
Okay. So, and I think this question, when we asked this question of all our guests on this season, but I think it's quite appropriate for this episode. What's one word you use to describe yourself in your internal dialogue that you don't say out loud?
If you asked me a few months ago or even last year, I think I would have said I was very critical about my weight. Mm-hmm. So I would call myself fat. I would call myself like jiggly, ugly, mm-hmm. whatever it was. Very, very critical of my body. But actually, and it's something we didn't talk about a lot in the podcast, but as part of the eating disorder therapy, accepting your body at the weight it is at and accepting, letting go of all the expectations that you have on your body, letting go of all the things that society has told you your body should be, and just practicing radical acceptance to the point where if you never lost a kilo in your life, you would be okay with where you are today. That was something very hard, but very transformative to go through. And I think that that has taught me a lot about self-acceptance.
Interesting.
Yeah. So that's been a big thing. So if you asked me again a year ago, it would definitely have something to do with how I looked physically. Today, what word do I use that I wouldn't use out loud?
It can be a positive one. It doesn't have to be a negative one.
Yeah. I was going to say that I have a newfound appreciation for myself this year because I've had to navigate 2020 by myself as an entrepreneur. I've been putting myself in situations where I wasn't normally comfortable before. Mm-hmm. So again, strategizing, big picture thinking, et cetera, and realizing that actually I'm really good at it if I allow myself to be in, if I put myself in these situations. So sometimes I call myself awesome.
Okay. Yeah. I like that. Awesome.
Yeah, I think it's super important to celebrate.
Okay, and what's the side of you that you'd like to step into more?
Definitely my spiritual side. Mm-hmm. So I think we talked about this earlier, but I've been very curious about digging into a new dimension. So beyond the mental and the physical, and understanding how spirituality ties to the mental and the physical. So I'm very interested about this whole sort of new realm for me, at least. And applying some tangible lessons from that to my life.
Okay. What's your favorite childhood memory and why?
Definitely something to do with the ocean. When I was growing up in Abu Dhabi, it's like our whole lives revolved around the ocean. So on the weekends, we went fishing on my dad's boat. After school, if we didn't finish too late, we would go and sit sort of on the corniche before it was all built up in Abu Dhabi and like you had to pay to get a chair, etc. It was just like this open beach. And we would just go and sit there, watch the sunset, hang out, barbecue with friends. It was a very wholesome upbringing in that sense. You know, there was no, when the rest of the world was starting to go clubbing at 14, 15, we were still having evening barbecues on the beach and like playing rugby on the sand and all that stuff. So there were also a few wild beaches where we would go and have campfires. And my best memories as a child revolved around the ocean.
But why do you think those are your favorite memories?
I associated with some kind of freedom. And I associate the ocean with some sort of carefreeness and power. And I guess it's going to get really deep now. Sorry. But I think that it symbolizes a lot of the things that I maybe felt like I lost about myself and that I want to get back, or a part of myself that I was when I was a teenager, when I was younger, that was like this. I was very connected to nature at the time. You know, I was at the beach all the time. I was a lot more carefree, etc. And I think that I lost my way a little bit in my 20s. And I lost some aspects of myself in that way. But it is where I want to be. And it is like work that I'm doing to get back there and to let go of some of the shoulds and shouldn't that I have hung on to for so long and that have taken me away from that person. And so when I think back of those like evenings and sunsets and weekends, you know, the sea and you're barefoot and you're in the sand and stuff, that's really what like sort of pulls at my heart.
That's amazing. I like that. That's such a good answer. And that's it. That's the last question.
Thank you so much for having me. It was great talking to you.
Thanks for joining me on the episode. It was awesome talking to you. We're going to put the links to where everyone can find you in the episode description. Thank you for being here. Thanks you guys for listening to this episode. This has been an amazing episode. Let me know what you guys think. And be sure to subscribe. And yeah, this is Mshad and Nancy signing out. Bye, guys.
Bye.